Hey, Bankless Nation, we are super excited to host this live debate. This is a debate on Terra, Luna, UST, the stablecoin, the bull versus bear case. I asked this question on Twitter, David, and I think this is the question for our debaters today. Is Terra, UST, the future of crypto money, or is it a ticking time bomb waiting to explode? Got a lot of responses on crypto Twitter as a result of that question. And then two debaters stepped up to the plate and were also nominated by the community to take one of two respective sides. One is the bull case for UST and the Luna ecosystem, the Terra ecosystem. The other is the bear case. And so we have two representatives taking that side. And we're going to try to get to, I guess, the truth, or at least hear the arguments from both sides in this conversation. David, who do we have on the show today? And do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, of course. Coming in the left side of the ring, on the bull case, we have Jose Makedo from Delphi Digital. And then in the right side of the ring, we have Jordi Alexander, Chief Investment Officer of Cellini Capital, for the bear case for Terra USD. And I think really this conversation hinges on the question of, do algorithmic stablecoins, can they work at all? And if they can work, has Terra USD, has UST cracked that nut? We've seen many algo stablecoins come and go. Lots of algorithmic stablecoin experiments on Ethereum, empty set dollar, dynamic set dollar. But we have not tried the experiment as a layer one until Terra came along. And so far, that's been going pretty well with Terra. But there's still a fundamental question as, can an algorithmic stablecoin work in the long term? And I think that's going to be the main topic of what we are going to talk about today, along with all these other periphery topics as well, such as how is Anchor involved with this, the $10 billion of Bitcoin treasury that's being accumulated by the Luna Guard Foundation, and a few other things as well. So Ryan, these are the focus of today's show.
And here's why this is important, guys. Like, Luna is valued at something like $30 billion, you know, plus or minus. I'm not sure at the time of recording. UST is now $16 billion. It's definitely making its way into all corners of DeFi. And so this is a substantial market cap for these assets. So we want to poke and see what's the viability look like for these assets. What do the growth prospects look like? Guys, before we get in, a quick announcement for you. Want to tell you a little bit about a fantastic NFT drop opportunity. And I think this is an opportunity for maybe first time NFT buyers or early buyers who want to support a good cause. So it is National Youth HIV and AIDS Awareness Day on April 10th. And the Consensus NFT team and also MAC, that's MAC, the makeup company, have partnered together to launch a set of NFTs from the iconic Keith Haring. Okay, art by Keith Haring. There are three different levels you can get in on this NFT. The first starts at $25. So all of the proceeds from this, here's the cool part, 100%. All of the proceeds, 100%, go to HIV AIDS issues involving youth, to support youth who are affected by HIV and AIDS. So really cool cause. And not only 100% of the sales, but also all of the resale value. So remember, the cool thing about NFTs is every time you sell an NFT, a royalty can be collected. In this case, it's 2.5%. That also, on an ongoing basis, forever, goes to the same cause. So super cool opportunity. We will include a link in the show notes, but if you want to memorize this, it's bankless.cc/MAC. That's all capital, M-A-C. And you can check this out. The next step is really just sign up, get on their list, so that when these NFTs come out, you will be first to know. David, with that, man, I'm really excited about this panel, because I feel like I haven't fully explored the Terra and Luna and UST ecosystem in the way I've wanted to. And I've been looking for an opportunity to sort of get both sides of the argument. So I'm excited to learn along with the guests. I probably have some, you know, preconceived notions coming into this, and I want to check those and see if they're true or not. But this is going to be a very important conversation, probably one of the most important conversations happening in crypto right now. So I'm super excited about this. You have anything else to add?
Yeah, it's extremely relevant. It's the talk of the town. The Terra community is full of energy at the moment. And so I think, Ryan, if we can do this show right, it will both be a 0 to 60 in understanding the Luna ecosystem, while also having a good back and forth debate as to the merits of the system, as well as the risks of the system as well.
Well, there's your hype, guys. We will be right back with our two debaters, our two panelists. But before we do, we want to thank the sponsors that made this episode possible.
Arbitrum is an Ethereum Layer 2 scaling solution that's going to completely change how we use DeFi and NFTs. Over 300 projects have already deployed to Arbitrum, and the DeFi and NFT ecosystems are growing rapidly. Some of the coolest and newest NFT collections have chosen Arbitrum as their home, all the while DeFi protocols continue to see increased usage and liquidity. Using Arbitrum has never been easier, especially with the ability to deposit directly into Arbitrum through all the exchanges, including Binance, FTX, Huobi, and Crypto.com. Once inside, you'll notice Arbitrum increases Ethereum speed by orders of magnitude for a fraction of the cost of the average gas fee. If you're a developer who wants low gas fees and instant transactions for your users, visit arbitrum.io/developer to start building your dApp on Arbitrum. If you're a degen, many of your favorite dApps on Ethereum are already on Arbitrum, with many moving over every day. Go to bridge.arbitrum.io now to start bridging over your ETH and other tokens in order to experience DeFi NFTs in the way it was always meant to be. Fast, cheap, secure, and friction-free. The Layer 2 era is upon us. Ethereum's Layer 2 ecosystem is growing every day, and we need bridges to be fast and efficient in order to live a Layer 2 life. Across is the fastest, cheapest, and most secure cross-chain bridge. With Across, you don't have to worry about the long wait times or high fees to get your assets to the chain of your choice. Assets are bridged and available for use almost instantaneously. Across bridges are powered by UMA's optimistic oracle to securely transfer tokens from Layer 2 back to Ethereum. A token proposal is being deliberated as we speak in the Across forum, where community members will decide on the token distribution. You can have your part of Across's story by joining the Discord and becoming a co-founder and helping to design the fair launch of Across. If you want to bridge your assets quickly and securely, go to across.to to bridge your assets between Ethereum, Optimism, Arbitrum, or Boba networks. MakerDAO is the OG DeFi protocol. The MakerDAO produces DAI, the industry's most battle-tested and resilient stablecoin. Using Maker, you don't need to sell your collateral if you need liquidity. Instead, you can spin up a Maker vault and use your collateral to mint DAI directly. With Maker, the power to mint new money is in your hands. The Maker protocol is extremely hardened and operated by one of the most experienced DAOs in existence. They've been here since the beginning, they've seen it all, and so you can mint DAI with the assurance that your collateral is safe. Soon, Maker will be present on all chains and L2s, so minting DAI can take place on Oasis.app, Zerion, Zapper, or any other DeFi protocol that you use. Follow Maker on Twitter, at MakerDAO, and learn from the oldest and most resilient DAO in existence. All right, ladies and gentlemen of the Bankless Nation, here are our two panelists. Again, in the left side of your screen, we have Jose Macedo coming in from Delphi Digital. He is going to be arguing the bull case for Terra Luna. And then on the right side of the ring, we have Jordi Alexander from Cellini Capital arguing for the bear case for the Terra ecosystem and for UST. Jose and Jordi, welcome to Bankless.
Thanks very much for having me. Big fan of the show.
Hey, guys. Happy to be here.
Cheers. Thank you guys for volunteering to do this. I think this is going to be pretty fun. And like I said, going into this, I think this will be an opportunity to go to teach a lot of the Bankless listeners, the Bankless community, who haven't completely dove in to the Luna ecosystem, all about Luna, while also providing the pros and cons, the benefits and the costs, the bull and the bear case for Terra. And so I'd actually kind of like to start at that high level of just kind of defining what we're actually talking about. And so, Jose, I'd like to start with you. Can you simply just explain the fundamental properties of Luna and UST? Like, what is the design philosophy and what are its goals and how does it achieve those goals?
For sure. Yeah, I know it's an educated audience, probably more steeped in sort of Ethereum projects than Terra. So I'll try and use some metaphors there. So I think the easiest way to understand Terra is actually through its product, which is UST, right? So UST is a decentralized stablecoin. You can think of it as something similar to DAI, but unlike DAI, which is built on top of Ethereum, UST exists on its own layer one, which is Terra, which is a Tendermint proof of stake app chain. So for the ETH maxis, or for people who understand ETH, you can say like, it's as if Maker MKR token didn't exist, right? So it's like, ETH, just ETH and DAI, and you have no MKR in the middle, so all the value would accrue to ETH, and you'd have like DAI sort of built into the layer one level, into the ETH layer one. And then, so how does UST itself work? So in terms of mechanism design, it's actually different from Maker, right? So Maker is a debt-based stablecoin, UST is more similar to an algorithmic stablecoin that has existed on Ethereum before. You mentioned some of them, ESD, DSD, etc., where basically the way you mint UST is by burning Luna, and the way you burn UST is by minting Luna. And so this gives Luna a really interesting role in the Terra ecosystem, right? Where it's both the staking token, like it would be for a proof of stake chain, but it's also the share token and the governance token for this decentralized stablecoin, right? And so in a sense, it secures both the system's like technical sort of consensus risk, but also the stablecoin's financial and economic risk. This also gives Luna like unrivaled value capture, I would say, at layer one, right? Because unlike most layer ones, which just capture value from transaction fees, Luna actually captures value in the growth of its main stablecoin. And since stablecoins are crypto's killer app on pretty much every chain, Luna like basically verticalizes, it's like vertically integrated, and it also captures the value from its main and like most successful application. So, and then in terms of contextual data that might be useful to your users, to your listeners, sorry, UST is the biggest decentralized stablecoin by market cap. It's at roughly 16 bill right now. It's also probably about to be the most liquid with the four pool. Maybe controversial, but it's probably about to be the most liquid. I would also argue, and I'll argue later, that it's the most decentralized in a certain sense. And then Luna has its own layer one ecosystem, which itself is thriving in the sense that it has around 30 billion in TVL. It's the second largest L1 by TVL. It has core primitives for a lot of the stuff that you'd see on Ethereum, savings, credit, exchange, perps, also an NFT, like a bunch of NFT marketplaces, a bunch of dope NFTs. So yeah, that's, I'd say like a high level intro to Terra.
So Jose, I'm going to ask Jordy to add to that, but just to kind of summarize the taking from maybe the Ethereum paradigm, right? So it's as if a layer one like Ethereum, that's what Terra essentially is, had an algorithmic stablecoin almost baked in, tightly coupled to its core protocol. And the value of that algorithmic stablecoin was somewhat sort of linked to, in an algorithmic way, ETH, the asset. So the L1 asset itself. And
it's like if the seniority accrued to ETH, right? Like the growth in, imagine if the growth in DAI all accrued to ETH, or in the centralized stables all accrued to ETH.
Right. And that is not the only, UST, of course, is not the only application on Terra. Terra also has, you know, general purpose smart contract layer, where it has other sort of DeFi applications as well. But it does have this special status, almost like almost protocol native. I don't know if that's too strong a term. Would you say protocol native, or do you still consider UST a separate app that is distinct from the protocol?
No, it's a native, it's protocol native for sure. So it's okay. Minted and burnt at the protocol level, and Luna and UST are both the two protocol native tokens.
So that is helpful, because we can't really talk about UST without talking about Luna. So I think for listeners listening to this, when we say Luna and UST, you know, sometimes we'll use them somewhat interchangeably, but of course UST is sort of the stablecoin pegged aspect, but it is almost a product of Luna. And these two things might be used somewhat interchangeably in this episode. Jordy, what would you add to this? Is there anything you would add to Jose's description, or anything you might disagree with?
I mean, in terms of the analogy to Maker and some of the, you know, stable coins that people might be familiar with, like DAI, for example, that are over collateralized, the difference is that in a way, UST is collateralized by the value of the underlying chain itself, by the L1, but instead of a model where you are necessarily changing your UST for Luna, instead it is adding inflation to the system. So imagine if somebody wanted to get rid of their DAI, instead of getting Ethereum from somebody, the system would literally just print new Ethereums and just kind of bestow those Ethereums onto the person that has DAI. So in a way, like the DAI is an extension of Ethereum, where you could just get more Ethereum created from that system. Of course, the problem we know with inflation is that it reduces the price. And that's kind of why historically these things have always failed, because as you create inflation, you reduce the price, you get into a death spiral where, you know, the underlying price is going down, and then, you know, people want to redeem more, and then there's like a rush for the exit. And if you find that there is not enough exit for everybody. Some people are kind of left holding the bag, and usually things go to zero in that case. That's kind of what we've seen historically, at least.
So I think to bolster this conversation, and Jordy, you just touched on it a little bit, and Jose also touched on it, but I want to make this a little bit more formal. There's a relationship between the value capture of the Terra ecosystem and then the Luna token and then also the UST token. And I want to kind of go back through this again. Jose, when the Terra ecosystem captures value, how does it manifest in the supply of UST versus the unit price of Luna, as in like the market cap of Luna versus the total supply of outstanding UST? When the Terra ecosystem grows and captures value, how does it get balanced between these two tokens? How does that happen?
Yeah, so when there's demand for like excess demand for UST, UST will trade above a dollar, right? And at that point, there's an incentive for someone to go and burn some Luna in order to mint UST and then sell it on the market and collect the arbitrage, right? With Luna providing kind of that layer one oracle price that sets how you can mint and burn UST. And so as the supply of UST grows, there's more demand for Luna to burn it, to mint, to capture these arbitrage opportunities. And then obviously Luna also captures a staking yield, which comes from the fees generated on the network, the swap fees, and the actual just transaction fees on the network. There's actually Luna staking yield, which is pretty high. It's not inflation based at all. It all comes from network fees.
And then Jordy, with this mechanism, what are like the strengths and weaknesses in this particular mechanism that stand out to you, or just any comment on that mechanism and its sustainability?
The problem with, so you don't really see there's a problem until there's like a huge problem. That's one big issue where there's going to be a straw that's going to break the camel's back at some point where, you know, you can keep backing. And then there's a point where it's just like suddenly like nosedives. So it's not like, you know, you get to slowly notice that something's wrong and you get to adjust and fix it. So that's one of the issues that these things historically have. Like it looks everything's okay, and then suddenly it goes bad. And the problem is if you have a lot of retail users and you have a few big whales, we'll get into this later, but if there's a rush, if there's a rush for the exit and you have a few very sophisticated players that own most of the coins and they get out first, then it's kind of bad luck for the people holding.
Well,
the only thing I would add to that, just on the historical metaphor that I think is important to note is, while I do think historical is important, the comparison and like the idea that it was all okay at a certain point with like ESD or DSD or whatever is just like, it's not true, right? But for anyone that was in those games, that thing traded at every price except a dollar. Like it was at $10 ESD at some point or like $5. And then obviously it went straight down all the way to whatever it is now, like fractions of a cent. So I don't think there's been any really algorithmic stablecoin that has anywhere near the track record of success of what UST has had, right? And like it's the comparison in a sense is a little bit disingenuous because like Titan, ESD, DSD, they really never maintain stability for more than even a few weeks. And so whereas UST has maintained stability for over like a year, in faced some pretty serious and testing market conditions. So I think the metaphors, while they're important and the design is similar, like the magnitude of success is just on a completely different scale where it's almost like incomparable.
I feel like we're already like diving into some of the debate topics that we definitely want to reach. But while we're talking still about the intro and the summary, to make sure the audience understands UST and Luna, is the last important piece, if you're coming from an Ethereum world that's different, as I understand things, Jordy and Jose, that Luna does not have a fixed supply. The same way, it does not have a monetary schedule in the way that Bitcoin is 21 million and Ethereum is sort of, you know, basically based on parameter controls and validating those sort of things. Luna will actually inflate its supply in order to like stabilize or respond to UST as a stablecoin, the demand for UST as a stablecoin. So that is one big distinction from the Ethereum ecosystem, the Luna ecosystem, the Terra ecosystem. So I see you nodding your head. Yes. So I think that's the case. Okay. So let's just high level, before we get into some of these individual topics, I want to hear your high level summary from each of you on, Jose, why you are bullish, and then Jordy, why you are bearish. And I think you've both hinted at some of these things, but like just put it into kind of the elevator pitch for us. We'll start with you, Jose. Why are you bullish on this design?
Yeah. So I actually think Jordy and I probably are closer in views on this than I would be with most other bears. But I want to do just a few disclaimers before doing the on the bullishness. So I'm very bullish Luna in that most of my net worth is in Luna and Luna alts, right? So that should tell you something about sort of my bullishness on Luna. However, that doesn't mean I think it's riskless. I've consistently sort of outlined what I think are the risks with it, and also the mitigants to those risks. It also doesn't mean I'm a maxi, right? I'm really, like, as Delphi Ventures, we've invested, like, most of our investments and most of our NAV is held in non-Luna ecosystem stuff. We've invested in other layer ones. We're interested in other stable coins like Frax and Faye specifically are designs that I'm interested in. So by no means a maxi. And then, okay, so in terms of the high level thesis for Luna, so maybe I'll do the high level and just go through step by step afterwards as well, if that's cool. I mean, maybe cut me off if not. So high level, stablecoins are crypto's killer app. I think this is hard to deny. Centralized stablecoins are, in my mind, a temporary stopgap that will be regulated away into irrelevance. The end game is necessarily decentralized stablecoins, which I think is arguably the biggest market in crypto. I think it's a multi-trillion dollar opportunity. UST is the largest decentralized stablecoin by market cap, and it's also growing the fastest. Like the second DAI is actually not growing, it's declining. Although decentralization is hard to quantify, as I said, I'll also argue that it's the most decentralized because it's the only one that doesn't rely on centralized censorable collateral like USDC and Tether. So that's sort of the high level thesis. I can go in like on step by step into like each of those points and add a bit more color to them if you want now, or I can let Jordy do his elevator thesis.
Yeah, I think that's perfect for now. That's the perfect level of expression of the bull case that we need for now. Jordy, what's your bear case?
Yeah, I'll do like a very quick disclaimer as well. I don't want Luna to fail. I'm not like betting against Luna. I'm not short Luna, but I do see a lot of, you know, potential issues in the road. And, you know, compared to the current euphoria around the Luna price that we've seen, I think there's a lot of things that people may need to understand and make.
And Jordy, are you a Luna holder?
I'm not a Luna holder. Okay. Oh, sorry. I have no Luna. Long or short. So
got it. Thank you.
I am in Anchor right now. I think it's we'll get into Anchor later. You know, presenting the bear case while being in Anchor are not two distinct things. I'll explain that I think Anchor is like a huge marketing spend right now that is a safe thing for investors potentially to just say thank you and take some 20% yield. While there is a lot of reserves, and we'll get into that later. But in terms of the bear case, there are huge amount of assumptions between here and the end game that Jose talks about. And I understand the end game, and I'm sympathetic to the end game. The end game is basically, you know, we want something decentralized as opposed to USDC, USDT, where the government can intervene. The problem with something over-collateralized is that it is very capital inefficient and cannot grow very fast, while UST, as we have been talking about, has been growing extremely rapidly. That also presents risks with it because you can get over your skis, grow too fast, and be in an imbalanced situation. But the main bear case is how far we are from here into execution are many, many steps removed than people realize. There's a lot of things that have to go right. And there's a lot of assumptions that we don't know. And there's two main ones. One is, will this peg hold in the meantime through volatility? And volatility can come either through a bear market or it can come through a reduction in demand once, you know, the yield on Anchor, which I believe is extremely crucial to the growth of Terra right now, reduces. And we're actually, the reality is nobody knows what the effect of that is going to be. Another assumption is even if it doesn't depeg, that's not the only bear case. It is entirely possible that as we have seen with Uniswap, as we have seen with other successful protocols in DeFi like Aave, if something works, people will try to make a better mousetrap, and you might see other L1s issue stable coins against them and add some little tweak on it on top, and they can offer a higher yield. This is kind of what we've seen with SushiSwap, and that will be bearish for Luna price without necessarily depegging the coin.
Okay, guys, thank you for those initial statements. And I think we're going to be touching on basically every single element that was discussed by each of you. And for this first one, to really start off the detailed side of this show, I want to go back to Jose. Jose, you talked a lot about how these other algo stable coins just have not performed in the same way that UST has. And UST is in a league of its own simply by performance, right? We had empty set dollar come and not really work, dynamic set dollar come and not really work. For what reasons do you ascribe the success of UST in the face of all the other algo stable coins that haven't worked? Like, what are the properties, what are the features of Terra and UST that has made UST hold its peg and be so successful, and what are those elements? What would you say is the rationale behind that?
Yeah, I'd say the main thing is just that most people treated algo stables as a mechanism problem design, where actually it's a utility and demand problem, right? So like everyone sees these things as just you design a mechanism, you design a coupon system, a bond, whatever it be. Then you just alter that over time and hopefully it can maintain the peg. But actually the main thing that backs a stablecoin is demand for it, right? That's the main backer for stablecoin. Stablecoin to take this sort of build it and they will come approach, or like peg it and will come approach, right? As long as we keep the system safe and pegged, people will use this. And what we've seen is that just hasn't really worked, right? And the approach that UST took, sorry, it says my connection is unstable. Can you hear me all right?
Yeah, we can kind of hear you. You're breaking up here and there. It actually might be beneficial if we actually just started from the beginning. Can you just start over?
Yeah, sorry about that. So I think the big difference is that most algo stables and stable coins generally treat stable coins as a mechanism design problem, where in reality it's a demand problem, right? So you can construct the most elegant mechanism you want, but the main thing that backs a stablecoin is demand for it. And so where everyone else kind of focused on their coupon mechanism or building an economy and around it. And so it's a lot, for example, the maker approach, which is sort of build it and they will come, or peg it and they will come, where, you know, And we've seen the struggles of that. Whereas UST, the approach was, let's not just build a stable coin and with a clever mechanism. Let's build an entire economy of use cases around this, centered around UST, which creates that demand around it. And obviously the first one was Mirror, which was allowed people to get exposure to synthetic assets. And I mean, at a high level, I would split sort of, because UST is money, right? And money, you want to use it for two main things, either spending or deferred spending, right? Which would be like investment. So deferred spending is sort of all of DeFi and TeFi, like all these tools. So Mirror, which gives you exposure to traditional assets, synthetic assets. You have Anchor, which gives you a savings rate. You have Astroport, where you can exchange it for different assets. You have Mars Protocol as a credit protocol. You have Prism, where you can split your yield. All these primitives that make this investment ecosystem really compelling, and that's only gonna keep growing. And then you have the spending use case, which is, how can I actually spend my UST in the real world, right? Because I don't want to have this savings account that's separate from my spending account. And there you have all these neobanks come online, like Cato, like Cash, like Alice, that are building all over the world and sort of doing the work on the front lines, on the regulatory front lines, to make UST spendable everywhere. And the ultimate vision is to sort of close the loop, right? Where you never have to leave this ecosystem. You have a really well-developed financial system with TeFi, and then you also have a really well-developed spending ecosystem where you can spend this stuff all over the world and sort of make that really seamless. And I think that vision is the big difference between UST and all the other stable coins. And we're seeing some of them understand this. So for instance, the Fei and Rari merger, I think, is an admission of this, right? That it's difficult to have just a stable coin. You need to build, you need to like verticalize and have your use cases on top of it. And so you've seen Fei like join up with Rari and build these use cases on top. You've seen Frax with Frax Lending. And I think the most successful ones are the ones that are able to do that. But I don't think, like, with the lead that UST has in terms of the system and just the community and everything, I think it's much better positioned than most of the others.
I want to throw this to Jordy in a second, but one quick follow-up, Jose, on this. I think your argument, to summarize it, is that the vanilla algorithmic stablecoin model, I think you are in agreement that like, without utility, algo stablecoins don't work. You can't just have an algo stablecoin just to have a algo stablecoin. You need to actually imbue it with utility for it actually to be sustainable. But my question to you is, are we just adding like a utility layer around an unstable foundation? Like, if we know that algo stablecoins are inherently unstable, can you really solve that by adding just a utility layer around it? Or, because in my mind, I think an argument could be made about how you're just obfuscating the instability, and the instability will rear its head at one day. You've just obfuscated with utility between now and then. What would you say to that?
I would say that it's not that algo stables are inherently unstable. It's just that most of them are focused on Ponzi incentives, right, versus utility. And what that does is it's really good at bootstrapping the supply of this algo stable, which, so right, with ESD and the expansions, you were getting like massive growth in ESD supply, but actually, like, there's no real demand sustaining that. And when the market turns, the outstanding stable coins are actually a liability of the share token, right? The share token has to honor that and gets minted in order to satisfy that. And so you have the situation where you've created loads of stable coins through Ponzi demand and yield. And when that goes, everyone wants to redeem at the same time, right? Which is why it's really important for an algo stable. You have to build demand at the same time as you build this holder base, because you need it to be that when sort of markets turn and people aren't, you know, collecting their like 10%, you know, seniorage a day or whatever on ESD, there needs to be people that are actually using ESD. And so they're not redeeming it because they actually see utility in it and they're using it to do all this stuff. And so it's not that they're inherently unstable. It's just that they got ahead of their skis because they used Ponzi incentives to grow supply loads without having the utility to actually like back that up in the contraction phase.
Awesome. That's a fantastic illustration. Jordy, what would you say to that? What are the thoughts that have risen to your mind?
You know, first of all, in terms of like the Ponzi-nomics, I would say that giving an unsustainable yield like Anchor is doing is a little bit like that. I understand why it is. And it's sort of, it's a marketing spend where you say, okay, if it's $15 billion and we're paying 10% above market, we're spending $1.5 billion. But if we're creating so much market cap, then it's sort of okay. And it's a worthwhile investment. And there's a lot of assumptions baked into that. I think,
Jordy, can you take a minute just to explain what you're talking about with Anchor? So this is some way to elicit demand for UST, as I understand it, through yield, which is maybe goes back to like what is a Ponzi incentive, but you're saying it exists in Anchor. Could you explain that for the listeners?
Yeah, I think like let's take a quick step back and tell the listeners what is Onterra, because it's been around a while. It's not like it just got created now, even though the price has been going up recently. You know, there were some fundamental building blocks that the Terra team built into the system. One was Chai, which was a payment system. The idea was if you integrate the stable coins into real world spending, that will be a link towards long-term sustainability because there's people actually spending it. It was a great idea. There's been a lot of issues with that. And I think the Chai experiment was fantastic. Regulation and other things in Korea. I don't think that, you know, UST is being spent for purchases. So let's call that kind of like a good idea that didn't necessarily follow through. Then we had Mirror Protocol, which was a synthetics competitor in terms of synthetic assets, stocks, bonds, creating these like financial instruments on chain to give access to people around the world. Also not something that's been extremely successful. We at Selene Capital have been in Mirror for a very long time and we like the protocol, but the reality is both on the regulatory side, as we saw with the SEC kind of complaints about it, and even on the stability side now, it was doing very well and it's been doing less well. And the assets there are not necessarily very stable right now. So another very good idea that has had problems executing. So what is the killer app? It is Anchor. Anchor is your savings bank. Instead of getting 0.1% at Wells Fargo, you get 20%. that is something simple enough and desirable enough that it has created this huge, huge surge in UST. And it is especially the case now that we're out of DeFi summer. We're out of the initial DeFi explosion where 20% yield was nothing, right? Like you had very easy 80, 100% yields. Like nobody cared about it and nobody was looking at Anchor. But since then, we've had a huge contraction in yields. As you know, the new protocols have figured out that maybe you shouldn't necessarily just give out all your tokens in the first week to predatory people who are just going to take them and leave. So that's reduced the risk-free yield in DeFi in general. And if you call it 10% now, the anchor is actually higher now, and they haven't reduced it because they realize what's going on. Like suddenly, like everybody wants to come to Anchor now because it's 20, so we should not reduce it.
Jordan, what do you mean? What do you mean by like they haven't reduced it? Who's in charge of reducing it and or increasing it? And also, where does the 20% yield in Anchor actually come from?
I'm sorry, Jordy. Free to answer that after this. Just I think maybe it would be useful to I'm happy to talk about Anchor, but I think it would be useful to have like the context of kind of the death spiral risk and like all of that and like that argument first, because so I don't know how I want to do it, because for me there's like four main counter arguments.
I think Jose,
like
death spiral. I think we'll get there for sure. What I want to hear from Jordy though is like this. You said something, Jose, which is that it's based on utility, like utility value is the big differentiator with UST. And I'm wondering if Jordy is getting to a point where he's saying, well, actually Anchor is similar to some of the Ponzi game type economics that we've seen in empty set dollar. I don't know if that's the point you're making, Jordy, but I'd like to hear your kind of your full expression of what you're saying with Anchor. So where's the 20% coming from?
So the 20, I can't say what Doe said to Kyle Samani, but the 20% is...
That was a South Park joke, by the way.
So the 20% is coming from the Luna Foundation Guard. It's coming from ultimately the powers that be that control Terra that have money to spend on marketing. A way to look at it is they're saying, you know, we have this money in the treasury. We will keep topping up as long as we feel like we're getting a worthwhile return on adoption. And we will keep topping up this 20% yield above what, you know, maybe 10% is like a normal value for the yield, given, you know, some of the natural rewards rates where you're getting the yield from the assets that are being staked. So it's a very expensive marketing spend. The problem I have with it is twofold. One is the Sybil resistance is always impossible to solve for. So yeah, if you can actually give 20% to retail, real people, you know, Alice and Joe, and they actually have a savings account with $20,000, they want to get 20%. And you think it's worthwhile to give them this extra $500 a year because you want to bring them into the ecosystem, that makes a lot of sense. But what you end up happening is Degen Box, for example, which is like a way to wrap MIM and UST together and kind of magnify the yield and kind of keep farming this like extra yield. That's kind of more the type of people that have taken advantage of the offer. So I don't think it's necessarily been super effective in terms of bringing in retail people. And it's so hard to do. Like, this is the problem with crypto in general and with blockchain in general. It's like, how do you just direct the rewards that you want to direct to real human beings instead of just a huge corporation or, you know, some Degen Box thing taking all of the incentives?
So Jordy, yeah. Back to kind of David's root question here, which is, I think Jose was saying, hey, this is different than other algo stablecoin experiments in the past. It's not empty set dollar. It's not basis cash. This is fundamentally different. And so won't end up with the same fate. I mean, we have like a field of gravestones, as David said at pre the show, of other algo stablecoins. Do you think that UST is destined to join those? Do you think it will ultimately fall in the same ways? Or do you think this time it is different with UST?
I think some people I talk to are completely convinced. I'm not convinced. I think it's sort of 50-50. It hangs in the balance. We have a much better team executing on Luna. Like Doquan has an amazing like execution spirit to him. You have Jump. You have like some strong players that are backing that are not going to just let this thing die. I think, you know, last May 2021, where we had a big drop in the entire market and UST started to depeg. There were some powerful friends that came in and saved the day and it didn't depeg. And, you know, 1 year later, those guys are kind of reaping the rewards. So it's much stronger than like some of these prior experiments. And I'm not sure it's going to depeg, but there are risks. There's two risks. One is Luna price goes down because the entire market is going down. People start worrying that there is not enough collateral in Luna to absorb all the UST. So if the entire market goes down 50, 60% in a bear market, including Bitcoin, which is kind of the collateral that is now being accumulated, which we'll get it, we haven't touched upon. But you know, God forbid the entire crypto market goes into like a really bad bear market, there's gonna be a loss of trust in UST because people are worried that there is not enough collateral to back it in terms of actual dollars. The collateralization percentage goes down and there's a rush for the doors. That's the one risk. And then the second risk comes from the other side. It comes from the dollar side, where if the 20% on Anchor gets reduced to 10% and then people no longer care about it, then you will see a, like we talked about before, they will burn UST, that will mint more Luna, it will create inflation in Luna. And that's kind of a potential risk that starts to create the basis of a death spiral where, you know, if Luna market cap is 30 billion and somebody burns 5 billion of UST, it's not just that Luna is going to go down by 5 billion to 25 billion. There is a multiplier effect. So it'll be like times 3 to times 8 or kind of like the estimates historically on like, you know, the effect of market caps. Like we've seen now in Bitcoin has gone up 10% based on, you know, a few billion of buying. It's not proportional to the market cap. So that's kind of like the hammer that falls down and 5 billion of Luna sales just wipes out the entire thing.
Right. Jose, I'm about to throw this to you, but just I think to recap that is, Jordy, I think what you're saying is that if you compare the outstanding supply of UST to the market cap of Luna, you're saying that there's no way that the Luna has enough like ammo, right? That it doesn't have enough capital to fully prevent a death spiral. Jose, you were about to kind of illustrate, I think, the case for a death spiral. And can you also just illustrate how Anchor, you think, fits into that role? Does the utility that Anchor providing to UST, is that helping UST maintain its peg? Or do you also see a risk with Anchor? And can you just illustrate some of your thoughts here on this?
Yeah, so the first thing is like Anchor, the 20% rate right now is unsustainable, right? The yield reserve is depleting, but simulations that have been done, and we can link to a few in the show notes, show that a sustainable rate would be anywhere from 7 to 12%, right? Which is still much higher than anything else available in DeFi. So the question is like, how much do you need to pay for people to accept the perceived peg risk of UST, right? And the number that the ecosystem landed on to start with was this 20%, which is a really strong meme. It's like the number where people are like, and even Jordy, right, who's a bear, is sort of want, the yield is high enough to compensate for him having some UST in there. So the question is, at what point? And now a proposal is passed to make the rate more dynamic, so it's gonna adjust every month, and so that the yield's gonna lower. And so the question is, like, what is the rate at which this people start saying, you know, this isn't worth the risk anymore? And for me, that would be like below 10%. That's my sort of estimate there, because I think Anchor is still going to be the highest rate in DeFi for the foreseeable future. And I think with its model, probably forever, in terms of the combination of stability and high yield, I think Anchor will continue to be that. And then the other thing to say is it's unsustainable. Just like PayPal giving away $20 to everyone that used PayPal initially was unsustainable, right? It's like Jordy said, it's marketing spend. And I totally disagree with the idea that it's been not that successful, or that the goal was to attract retail. In my mind, it's been massively successful because it's grown UST supply to 16 billion. It's increased UST liquidity. And I don't necessarily buy this thing that we need to attract retail, or like, this is a sort of a separate argument. I think like Jordy is the user. Like now Jordy's using UST, and so are a bunch of other big funds in the space. They have exposure to UST. And you have this magic thing that happens where when the capital went into Anchor, that's when people saw UST as most risky because it was completely uncollateralized. And so they needed that 20%. But now there's a Bitcoin reserve, right? And what if by the time, and Doe can fund this yield reserve for a long time. And so what if by the time the yield reserve is the yield comes down, the UST is like 80% backed by reserves, right? Then suddenly you have this magic trick where people came in because they wanted the high yield, the really high yield, and they needed that high yield to compensate them for the risk. But now there's a magic trick that happens and you're like, well, I kind of trust this thing now. You know, it's been around for a while. The four pool is the most liquid pool in DeFi. This thing has all the trading pairs. There's exchanges on layer two like Zigzag that are using this. Actually, I want to keep my UST. And so it's achieved exactly what it set out to do, right? And for me, it's the most no-brainer marketing spend ever. Like if you can spend 500 million to top up a reserve and get 16, you know, or like 10 billion in additional UST and get everyone using it and talking about it, and then you can collateralize it in the meanwhile and increase the trust in it. I just think it's like just a genius move in my mind. And so that those are sort of my thoughts on the Anchor sustainability piece.
On the you indicated something like a 10% real rate, real yield coming from people that are actually paying into Anchor, and then it goes up to 20% when you add in like the rewards, right? It's basically like a yield farming incentive program.
Not exactly like that, but yeah, it's just that basically the rate that could be sustained because mm-hmm. the Anchor rate is sort of a liability for the Anchor platform, right? Because they have to generate enough borrowing in order to be able to pay that rate to depositors because the depositors, right? So the simulations that have been done is given current borrowing activity, how much yield could Anchor actually pay out? And so Anchor is maintaining the 20% rate, not through any, it's not like a yield farm. It's just literally, LFG sending some money to the yield reserve, which allows it to keep depleting and paying out that liability of the platform.
Right, but and you said that if the fund stopped incentivizing the yields, it would come down to something like 7 to 12%. I think you said.
Yeah,
that is so high above the rest of the industry. I think like USEC is 2 to 3%. Where does so much demand to borrow out of Anchor come from?
Yeah, I mean it is the best place to borrow most proof of stake layer one assets. Right, the model is that. You give up your proof of stake yield on your layer one asset, and in exchange, you borrow very, very cheaply, and you have the Anchor incentives on top. So there is some like this model is like any model of stuff like this has its flaws. For instance, it obviously has to assume an Anchor price and the incentives that are being paid out to borrowers and stuff like that, and there's some reflexivity all the way through. But yeah, that's how it does it.
I think we're going to talk about maybe the probability of DPEG risk in just a minute, because I think, Jose, you sort of underweight that a little bit. You think it's overstated, maybe. And I'm guessing, Jordy, you probably believe the opposite. But I do want to just zone in on this question, because you brought it up, Jose, is the fact that LFG, which is a fund associated with Luna, in kind of that ecosystem and helping to like prop up the value of that economy, and specifically UST, there's been recently in crypto news, Do Kwon purchasing, you know, like up to $10 billion worth of Luna. And just before this call, I saw a LFG fund purchase, which is kind of an acting org for Do Kwon and the Terra ecosystem, purchasing, I don't know, 200 million or something Bitcoin. Like they're doing this. This is one thing I don't understand personally, which is the fact that they're having to buy a foreign asset, this is kind of to me like a bank reserve or a central bank reserve, maybe going and buying a foreign asset, an off-chain asset to Luna. The fact that they're buying Bitcoin, is that not an admission that the model isn't sustainable and doesn't work? Tell me about that, Jose. How would you respond?
Yeah, I don't really get that argument. Like, for instance, like Ethereum is the fact that Ethereum is moving to ETH 2.0, proof of stake, sharding, an admission that Ethereum as it currently stands doesn't work? No, Ethereum as it currently stands works. It's just ETH 2.0 is way better, right? It's a better design. And so like Luna as it existed for its history as a pure algorithmic stable worked. It's hard to deny that it worked. It survived contractions. It grew like exponentially. It created a lot of use cases around it. But as it gets into this next stage of adoption and trust, that Bitcoin reserve backing is super important in order to bootstrap that trust and increase that trust and allow it to scale further.
Jordy, do you want to comment on this before we move to systemic risks and the DPEG risks specifically?
I think it was universally agreed, even by the bears, that using Bitcoin as collateral and not only Luna is the right decision. It was a very smart move. It makes, even if you say it's fairly highly correlated to Luna, it's not going to be one-to-one correlated. So it is adding potentially some diversification and stability to the system versus having just Luna. It just adds Bitcoin risk, and people will always be looking at, you know, what the if Bitcoin goes down, they'll be saying, well, you know, Luna took a $1 billion loss today because they have 8 billion in Bitcoin and it went down 10%. And that could create some FUD that you're kind of opening up to. But I think that move in itself was not a bad move.
And Jordy, that Bitcoin itself, that's custody, is it not? Like, where does that Bitcoin live?
So this is like when I talked at the very beginning that we are so far from like the vision, which I like the vision, but like we are so far from the vision. There are so many things to figure out, even for these like super smart people that are trying to figure it out. They're extremely complex. Like you have Bitcoin, Bitcoin's on the Bitcoin network. You want to have Bitcoin on the Luna network so that it automatically in a decentralized fashion will be able to be redeemed at 98% of a UST. And we can explain why it's 98% and not one-to-one. But, you know, we've seen all the hacks with bridges. We're going to see what solution ends up being found. And if it's RenBTC or what version of wrapped Bitcoin they end up using. But this is an execution risk that in my mind is far from being solved and is not without risks.
We've always like on Bankless.
I would agree with that.
Yeah, I'm curious your thoughts, because like always on Bankless, we've always been, I mean, the show is called Bankless, right? Mm-hmm. But we've always been in the mindsets that the moment the asset starts to have trust assumptions and get custodied is the moment you start to turn into a bank. And I'm wondering, maybe Jose, like your take on this, is what Terra is creating with UST, now it's bringing in foreign asset reserves, basically. How's this different than a bank?
I'm a director of LFG, so one of seven directors of LFG. This is a kind of disclosure. I agree. It's an unsolved problem to Jordy's point. How to bring Bitcoin to Terra in the most trustless way possible. There are solutions out there. There's Axelar, I think is an interesting solution. It's pretty trustless. There's obviously Thorchain, but none of them are ready for multiple billion dollars of Bitcoin. And so at this stage, the Bitcoin is custodied by the foundation itself, which is not ideal. And then in terms of whether bringing in an asset like adds makes it a bank, no, I don't think so, because like the there's already an asset there. There's Luna, right? And that asset is like the native asset of the network. The only thing that it adds is trust assumptions, for sure, in terms of bringing Bitcoin over to the network. But I don't think trust assumptions make it a bank, right? A bank is literally the bank controls it. It's a centralized legal entity that controls these assets. Depending what solution is chosen, is going to be much more of a decentralized process, and obviously with its own set of additional trust assumptions. That much is like inevitable, I'd say.
I want to ask a similar question, just from the perspective of the protocol, though. Ryan said that when you use Bitcoin to help backstop UST, you're kind of admitting that you need external help to make the protocol sustainable. And I think this really goes into one of the design philosophy differences between Ethereum and Terra, where Terra seems to be totally okay with like tapping into the power and the market cap of Bitcoin to help bolster its ecosystem. But in my mind, that is one protocol, the Luna protocol, saying that we need security from external, we need external help for security for the protocol. As in the protocol can't sustain itself, we need to tap into the power of Bitcoin in order to make this thing long-term sustainable. And I don't think, in my mind, that you don't really, as a layer one protocol, it's a risk. It's a risk to tap into something that you don't have control over in order to help maintain the functioning of your ecosystem. Like Bitcoin can do things that are outside of the control of Terra because it's outside of the protocol. Jose, do you see these concerns?
Not really, because like Maker, you know, DAI is backed by Bitcoin, and actually a very weak form of Bitcoin, right? With very weak trust assumptions, which is WBTC, which is basically a BitGo multisig. It's also backed by USDC, right? Which is literally like centralized stablecoins or an IOU for dollars in a bank account, right? Like if the US government calls Circle and obviously it's not, I'm not saying it's going to be a phone call, but like there's processes in which those funds could be frozen. USDC's blacklisted addresses before, like it's very vulnerable. And I would argue a much bigger vulnerability than the Bitcoin one. And I still don't agree with this admission article argument, sorry, because it's not an admission. It's sort of a growth of the model. And I don't think Bitcoin's going to be the only asset that backs UST either in the future. I think there's going to be additional layer one assets as they prove themselves that the community might think would make for good reserve assets. So yeah, I don't see it as an admission. I see it as an evolution of the model, in the same way that Ethereum 2.0 isn't an admission that Ethereum doesn't work, because clearly Ethereum works. It's the most successful network in crypto. It's just that it this is a better model.
Does this require, for this to really work, does this kind of require like a trustless bridge ecosystem to be sufficiently built out? Like, we don't really want the long-term Luna system to really just be dependent on like trust, right? We want to have these things baked into smart contracts using trustless bridges. Is that kind of the model for how we would get all these layer one assets also backing UST?
Yes. We need good trustless bridges, but there are other design opportunities, right? Like you could create synthetic assets, so sort of at the layer one level with an oracle at the layer one level. There's a design space here which has different trust assumptions and different trade-offs, but I don't think that's the only possible solution.
Okay, Jordy, let's move on to like the DPEG risk here, because that's something we've seen with other algo stablecoins, you know, Death Spiral, DPEGging, and eventual kind of like a tombstone at the end of it. What are the risks of a DPEG event in the UST Terra ecosystem?
Ryan, I think it's the two that I touched upon. So one is there is a reduction in UST demand. And, you know, I think even Jose said how important that demand is. And the role that the Luna team has is to sustain that demand. Because if the demand goes down, that really kind of creates a problem. A reduction in demand because of Anchor having to reduce its yields and then people finding higher yields somewhere else. Like I said, it's entirely possible that another layer one designs the same mechanism and gives a slightly higher yield, and that can create a relative, I mean, I agree with Jose, like it can't just be like a totally like new layer one that exists out of thin air because people won't trust it. And we've seen something similar recently with Waves, which is not new, but is kind of had some issues with a similar model. But an existing layer one can try to start seeing how successful this design is, can just start doing it themselves and increase yield a little bit. So there's a lot of ways that the demand for UST can go down. Now, what they're trying to do in the meantime, I don't think it's exactly marketing spend. I think what in effect they're doing is buying time. They're buying time on the Luna side to say, we will do this for a year. And in that year, we will go like all out and integrate as many places as we can in the DeFi ecosystem. We will get on Curve. We will get on the pools. We will try to have UST perpetuals trading instead of USDT Tether perpetuals for trading venues. We will put UST everywhere to the point where we try to, like, it's sort of a bet that you can create enough use cases where people will just, like you know, we've been living with Tether risk for years, right? Because we need it to exist. Trading venues need it, Binance needs it, and it's kind of been supported by the whole community. And in a way, I think the plan is make it similar to that, make it similar to Tether, and not in the centralized sense, but in the sense of the community accepts that, yeah, maybe it's not, we don't know if it's 100% backed, but we're just going to go with it. And it's a gamble. And, you know, I'm not saying it's a bad gamble. It's a gamble. I don't know if any of you guys have Korean friends. I have Korean friends, and they love to gamble, and they're, you know, it's fine. But that's, we should say what's going on.
It's funny. One person's fake it till you make it is another person's like, that's just bootstrapping. And so I'm curious, Jose, what your response would be to the depegging and death spiral risk in UST. Do you think it's overrated or underrated?
Well, the first thing I'd say is it's important to concede that there is a risk, right? And people need to be aware of that risk when they both use UST and when they use Luna, because there is that risk. It's a design where that's happened in the past, and obviously that's there. But what I would say is that, like, first of all, even before the Bitcoin reserves, actually, maybe if we go from a little bit higher level, when you have a design like DAI, even higher level, actually, so all these things have risks, right? DAI, as safe as the overcollateralized design is, nearly blew up in Black Friday or whatever, Black Thursday, whatever it was, because of congestion on at the chain level. Like, all these things have risks, even things that you don't think have risks and have smart contract bugs and things. And so, and then also, decentralized stables that use centralized collateral have a complete other set of risks, right? Which is that actually the collateral they're using could be censored. And if we go PVP with governments, which is the real PVP rather than the PVP against each other, that's like a very real risk. So there's like a spectrum of risks, and it's not that UST is the only risky stablecoin. It's that stablecoins have different sets of risks and trade-offs that they make, right? And so the trade-off for me between DAI and UST, which are the only the two biggest decentralized stablecoins, is that DAI prioritizes safety and like protection from tail risk over growth, and UST prioritizes growth and capital efficiency over downside risk, right? And so what we've seen with DAI is it's really hard to grow it, because demand for DAI actually doesn't grow the supply of DAI. It's the demand for leverage that does. And so Maker ends up competing with other lending platforms for this, which is why they've had to add centralized collateral like USDC, right? And so that's a problem in itself, right? And then UST, obviously, as we've seen, can grow much quicker, but the trade-off is this downside risk that we're talking about, this tail risk that can happen with the reflexivity death spiral. And just like Jordi explained it really well, but there's kind of two scenarios, right, with a death spiral. One is like Luna bear market, or like crypto bear market, Luna crashes, people are like, oh shit, I don't know if Luna can swear on this. If not, just maybe you can bleep it out later. Luna crashes, everyone's like, I don't know if Luna can like honor all its liabilities in UST. They start redeeming their UST, more Luna gets minted, the price crashes further, more people want to redeem UST, etc. And then the second one is it starts with UST instead, right? There's a large contraction of demand for UST, which mints a lot of Luna, price goes down, and then the death spiral starts that way. And so the first thing I would say is that like Luna is backed by every stablecoin, but Luna specifically is backed by three things, right? The first and most important one is demand for itself. Non-speculative demand is really the holy grail of backing for a stablecoin. And that's what backed Luna for most of its history, other than in certain contractions where Luna had to come in. So the second thing that backs Luna is Luna itself, right? In that it absorbs shifts in demand for UST. When demand goes down, Luna gets minted to absorb that. And now we have this third layer as well, which is this Bitcoin reserve, which effectively acts as an escape hatch and breaks that reflexivity spiral, right? Because now when people want to redeem UST and there's a large contraction, sharp contraction in demand, instead of having to mint Luna, they have this ability to, this escape hatch, this escape valve, which is Bitcoin, where they can redeem it for Bitcoin, right? Which reduces the pressure on Luna and breaks that like reflexive death spiral, which is really the problem. Now, so that's all clear. The valid question to ask about this is, whether 3 billion is enough, right? Like given that UST is now at 16 billion, is 3 billion actually enough reserves to protect it? And I think the honest answer is that no one knows. It's impossible to model these things. Like reflexivity is really hard to model, right? All these things, you have variables that aren't independent. They all actually like are recursive and depend on each other. So it's really hard to model. what I would say is the system survived up till now with no reserves. And so I think the psychological impact of this is going to be huge. And then I would also say that what the LFG raise really shows is that people understand, like investors understand the upside of UST, which is the other side of the trade-off, right? Which is that you can grow faster. Stablecoins are a network effects business. There's going to be one or a few big winners on this. There's a bunch of network effects, liquidity, Lindy. And so it's really difficult to unseat a stablecoin. And what we've seen is that when you start with collateralization, you don't necessarily get demand. But when you start with demand, you can get collateralization. That's what the LFG raise proves, right? And what we're seeing right now, I have good reason to believe there's enough demand on secondary markets to bring Luna above sort of 50 to 75% in Bitcoin reserves just right now, right? Through transactions on the secondary market. And so my view is that basically 3 billion, I don't know if it's enough, but if it isn't, I think Luna can collateralize itself over time, both through these secondary sales, and collateralize the wrong word. Reserves is really the right word, but it can grow those reserves over time, both on the secondary market and through seniorage. So changing the mechanism so that instead of all the Luna being burnt, part of it's actually used to acquire Bitcoin over time so that the reserves can grow organically over time. That's my view on it. Yeah.
I have one quick question, then we're going to have to pause for break. And if you're okay with it, we want to go over time because this has been such an insightful like conversation. We still have a few more topics to cover. Is that cool?
Absolutely.
Some more time after the break. Okay. Just one quick follow-up on this, Jose. I mean, you mentioned Lindy effect, right? And you also mentioned Maker being tested in 2020. Part of me wonders about this. Has UST actually been tested? Because the real test of, I think, any stablecoin design, algorithmic or otherwise, is how does it sustain, not during the good times, but during like the bad times, as Jordy was saying earlier, the tail risk events. And when Maker had that like ETH price drop with exorbitant gas fees and everything in the COVID drop of Black Thursday in March of 2020, that was a huge testing event for Maker. And like people didn't know how it would fare because it never had felt something like that before. But it made it out, it sustained it on the other side. I'm curious whether Luna has actually been tested in your mind. Like, it's one thing for an algo stablecoin to work during a bull run, and Luna's had an absolutely massive secular bull run for the last year or more. That's one thing, but that's easy mode. That's not what a stablecoin is meant to be built for. It's meant to be built when there's earthquakes and tornadoes and hurricanes, and the entire world is shaking around you. Has it been tested in that way? And do you think that is an important piece in terms of building the credibility of this system?
100%. I think so. Our equivalent, or the Terra community's equivalent of the Maker Black Thursday was May 2021. So May 2021 last year, where Luna dropped from, there was a contraction in UST supply at the same time as there was sort of some coordinated FUD around Luna. Not to say coordinated in the sense of like that there was anything malicious, just that there was, it all happened at the same time, right? It was very adverse market conditions. Luna dropped from $20+ to $3 in that time. There was a contraction in UST supply, but then buyers came in for Luna, and the system survived, right? And there was a lot of lessons learned from that, both in terms of on the mechanism side, increasing on-chain liquidity, changing some of the parameters for minting and burning, and also other lessons that have been learned there. Now, the UST was much smaller when that happened, so I do think there'll be other tests. I don't think like the UST or Luna Journey is going to be up only. So I think there are going to be other tests for it, but certainly it's been battle tested. Like think about how, think about using, the other thing that was really actually promising during that May drop was that while Luna was dropping and like, and sort of the death spiral was underway effectively, you actually saw deposits on Anchor increase, which means that there were some people that were actually selling Luna for UST, fleeing to safety, right? And so what that shows, and it's like a really positive thing, I think, psychologically, is that some people already see UST as their safe haven. You know, when shit hits the fan on chain, they're actually fleeing to UST and going into Anchor and saying, I need a break. You know, I need to go into stables. And so like, imagine anyone doing that with like ESD or DSD, right? Like no one is fleeing to the safety of ESD or DSD.
But I don't know. I mean, just to interrupt. Like, I don't know if you can say that. Like, that's proof that like smart people are like, you know, the smart money is doing it. It's within the Terra ecosystem, within people who are lunatics. It makes sense. You know, they're like, should I have the variable one or the stable one? And like, I'm going to stay within the ecosystem. I'm not going to bridge out. I'm not going to like find a way out. I'm just going to move between the two. I mean, I agree with a lot of what you said, but I'm not sure that necessarily proves something that like, you know, smart people are doing that.
No comment on the smart people thing, but it does prove Lindy, right? It proves that for some people, it's a stable coin. It's safety. It proves that there's like a psychological sort of belief in it that some people have, and it's hard to deny whether you would do it or whether you think it was smart for them to do it.
Fair enough. I'm trying to say every community, like a Cardano, you know, if Cardano community, if there was a market crash, they would do the same. Every community that is a community, that is a layer one, there will be people within that community, within that layer one that seek to do that.
But I'd say it's slightly different. I agree, but I'd say it's slightly different because that one thing is buying Cardano when it drops and you're like Cardano to the, I'm happy the price dropped. You know, I get to buy more or whatever the cope stuff that people say at those points. Another thing is buying the actual stable coin, right? Because that shows that you trust the system. It's not even that you want, you're not buying it for profit or you're buying the dip. You're actually just like using the system as it's meant to be designed. So like, I think it's a slightly like different point. I agree with your
it's slightly different. And I do want to ask you, would you not say that in terms of Lindiness, the upcoming, like you said, the yield reduction in Anchor is going to be a whole new different type of test that we don't know yet what's going to happen with that?
Yeah, I would say so. I'm pretty positive on that. I don't think it'll matter that much for the reasons I said before, but I agree it's going to be a big test, and the tests faced now will be much bigger than the ones faced previously for sure.
Awesome, guys. Thank you for going on that back and forth. That was immensely interesting. There are a couple of subjects which we haven't touched on yet, which we definitely need to before we wrap up this show. The Pool 4 is definitely clamoring, being talked about throughout the ecosystem, both on the Maker side and on the Terra side. It seems to be that the word Maker just creates a bunch of just very strong emotions, according to the YouTube chat that I've been watching. They do not like that word. So we're going to have to talk about the four pool. There's also, we want to talk about Do Kwon himself, the level of key man risk that is associated with UST and Do Kwon. The guy has a ton of confidence lately, and I want to get your guys' perceptions as to the level of risk. And there's also the conversation of just simply being too big to fail. And is this an actual intentful strategy by the Terra ecosystem just becomes so large that it becomes too big to fail, and what does that even mean? So these are the remaining topics that we want to get your guys' opinions on, and we'll get there right after we talk about some of these fantastic sponsors that make the show possible. If you're trying to grow and preserve your crypto wealth, optimizing your taxes is just as lucrative as trying to find the next hidden gem. Alto IRA can help you invest in crypto in tax-advantaged ways to help you preserve your hard-earned money. Alto Crypto IRA lets you invest in more than 150 coins and tokens with all the same tax advantages of an IRA. They make it easy to fund your alternative IRA or crypto IRA via your 401k or by contributing directly from your bank account. There is no setup or account fees, and it's all you need to do to invest in crypto tax-free. Let me repeat that again. You can invest in crypto tax-free. Diversify like the pros and trade without tax headaches. Open an Alto Crypto IRA to invest in crypto tax-free. Just go to altoira.com/bankless. That's altoira.com/bankless and start investing in crypto today. The Brave browser is the user-first browser for the Web3 internet with over 50 million monthly active users. Control your digital footprint with built-in privacy and ad blocking. Inside the Brave browser, you'll find the Brave wallet, the first secure crypto wallet built natively inside of a Web3 crypto browser. Web3 is freedom from big tech and Wall Street, more control and better privacy. But there's a weak point in Web3, your crypto wallet. The Brave wallet is different. Brave wallet is built natively inside the Brave browser, no extension required, which gives the Brave wallet an extra level of security versus other wallets. With the Brave wallet, you can buy, store, send, and swap your crypto assets assets, and you can even manage your NFTs and connect to other wallets and DeFi apps, all from the security of the best privacy browser on the market. Whether you're new to crypto or a seasoned pro, it's time to switch to the Brave wallet. Download Brave at brave.com/bankless and click the wallet icon to get started. Aave is the leading decentralized liquidity protocol, and now Aave V3 is here. Aave V3 has powerful new features to enable you to get the most out of DeFi, including isolation mode, which allows for many more markets to be launched with more exotic collateral types, and also efficiency mode, which allows for higher loan-to-value ratios, and of course, portals, allowing users to port their Aave position across all of the networks that Aave operates on, like Polygon, Phantom, Avalanche, Arbitrum, Optimism, and Harmony. The beautiful thing about Aave is that it's completely open source, decentralized, and governed by its community, enabling a truly bankless future for us all. To get your first crypto collateralized loan, get started at Aave.com. That's Aave.com. And also check out the Aave Protocol Governance Forums to see what more than 100,000 DAO members are all raving about at governance.aave.com.
Hey guys, we are back with Jose and Jordi. This is the best debate I've ever heard on this topic. Just fantastic. So we appreciate these two for going over time with us, but we just wanted to make sure we covered all of the topics to best inform you. Here's another topic. I think the bears of the critics of Luna and UST would say that there's a lot of key man risk. Some might even say, like, is this like banker type risk? Doquan is appearing more and more as kind of an Elon Musk type of figure, I would say, in the community. And take that for the kind of the good and the bad side of things, but definitely somebody who makes statements like "by mine own hand, DAI will die" when like talking about the competition between Maker and the DAI ecosystem and UST. Some have talked about how maybe Doquan is flying a bit close to the sun with some of these statements and maybe some of the regulatory risk that's going on as well. Of course, the SEC is in play, but like when you have a centralized, you would say decentralized, I think, Jose, but when you have a stable coin of this type, you might attract some unwanted attention from regulators as well. And all of this kind of comes down to Doquan and sort of a smaller operating team would be the criticism. I'm curious, first of all, maybe the bear case for all of this, from your perspective, Jordi, do you think that there's some key man risk that the UST Terra ecosystem is dealing with? You think there are some centralization vectors? How would you talk about this piece of it?
Yeah, I'm glad you said centralization vectors, because I think that's the bigger issue. In terms of Doquan, I think he's phenomenally intelligent. He's been making very good decisions, and he's the reason why this has gone as far as it's gone compared to, like, you know, the things that have not even gotten out of the gate. Obviously, there's key man risk. If he gets hit by a bus here in Singapore tomorrow, well, everyone's going to sell. Like, that's a problem. I don't have a huge problem with that because we are early stages, and he's building something that eventually is supposed to kind of run itself. I don't think it's a question that right now there is a key man risk. I don't want to personally focus on that because anything, like, you could say that about Elon and Tesla. Like, does that mean like Tesla should not exist because, you know, Elon, there's human risk. I don't think it's a big deal in itself. I do want to touch on the second point about centralization. I don't know if Jose wants to answer about Doquan first, though. He's obviously worked with him when I have, and maybe he can answer about that.
Nah, go ahead. I probably agree with your take on it pretty closely. So yeah, go ahead on the centralization point, and then I can answer both.
Yeah, I mean, the bigger issue I have is we're talking about decentralization, this decentralized stablecoin. I don't know that there is enough diversity in the ecosystem and the people who are building and supporting the ecosystem yet. And I'm not talking about DOE. I'm talking more kind of like the Jump Capital, Jump Crypto, whatever they call themselves now. They are such a huge backer and supporter that I think overshadows, obviously, Delphi as well. But I'm sure you're behind the scenes. You kind of know what I'm talking about. It's a bit less organic than some of the other layer ones. And that's going to take a while to change. And I don't know exactly how we get from point A to point B, where it is a community, fully decentralized kind of run thing, as opposed to, you know, you have one brilliant founder and like a very powerful kind of company that's really, how do you get from point A to point B?
Yep. Do you want me to comment on that now?
Yeah, go ahead. Respond, Jose.
Cool. Yeah, so the first thing to say is I obviously really believe in decentralization. Like, I wouldn't be in this space if I didn't think that was super important. However, I do think I believe in like progressive decentralization, right? And I do think projects need to decentralize over time and in the right way. And I think the way, like, and especially for a stablecoin, because a stablecoin requires a lot of like get shit done energy. You know, you need to push integrations, you need to build products around it, you need to do all the stuff that kind of Doquan has been so good at doing. And I think what we see with like when you decentralize too early is sort of what you're seeing in my mind, by the way, this is just my opinion on the Maker governance forums. And I'm a huge fan of Maker. It was my first altcoin that I bought after Ethereum. I learned loads on those Maker forums back in the day. So like big fan of Maker. But to me, to see their governance at work now is a huge disappointment, right? It's a massive bureaucratic mess. There's committees for everything. People aren't well paid, like communities weighing in and commenting on things. They're very focused on risk assessment versus growth. You know, Rune, the founder of Maker, kind of admitted he doesn't understand the curve wars, which are sort of like the lifeblood of liquidity for stable coins in a decentralized world. They seem to have that like a sort of an arrogant attitude towards DeFi generally, that it's all Ponzi's and the only thing that matters is these real world assets and green bonds and all this. So like I do think that decentralizing too early is a problem. And for me, the right way to decentralize is actually to do what Terra is doing and onboard like these big organizations with skin in the game that act as like a separate participant and stakeholder in the ecosystem, right? And there's a bunch of those now. Obviously, Jump, as Jordy pointed out, is a big one. I would say Delphi Labs, so the part of Delphi that I head up is another big one, sort of contributing to projects in the Terra ecosystem. In the recent round, we had some really good additions with Three Arrows and others. There's someone behind the scenes that are doing a lot of work in the Terra ecosystem. And I do think that's the right way to decentralize, right? With these big organizations that are focused, that have skin in the game. And the other thing to remember is like, we're literally decentralizing now would be so early because UST market cap is 16 billion and this is a multi-trillion dollar market, right? And the time to like, it's much easier to grow fast when you're more centralized than it is decentralized. And so for me, the plan should be to progressively decentralize over time, grow supply loads, and then once you have that Lindy effect and once you've grown, decentralize and focus on robustness. And obviously there's a balance, but that's sort of my take. And I do think decentralization in crypto unfortunately often gets used as sort of a way for founders that have made it to kind of like semi-retire, right? And become contributors and like pass it off to the community when really the project isn't ready for that. And it needs that founder energy to kind of push things forward. Not that they should be a centralized point of control, and Do isn't, right? The system would work without him, but they need that energy of contribution and that inspiration, inspirational leadership to push it forward. And then in terms of key man risk, clearly there's key man risk around Do. He's a machine. Like I worked with a lot of founders in the space. I'd say Do is the best one, maybe along with like Stani. He's like a really good mix of sort of a great engineer and like a very, very sharp engineering brain with hustle, vision. And then he's obviously like made it several times over, but is still incredibly motivated, works harder than me, you know, takes less holidays than I do. So it's clearly key man risk around that. Hard to avoid in an early stage project.
Jose, with the spectrum of centralization and decentralization, I'm wondering if you agree with this take, right? So like you've got like a Bitcoin and Ethereum, which are maybe on the far left side of the decentralization spectrum, like veering towards most decentralized, right? And then you have like the traditional TradFi system that's call that kind of the right side of the spectrum, right? And then you have like crypto banks, you have the FTXs of the world, and you have the Coinbases of the world that, you know, are a bit left of the traditional finance because they're using decentralized crypto networks to settle things and that sort of thing. Some people have compared the Terra ecosystem to almost like this hybrid mix. It's sort of like fintech-ish meets blockchain and placed it kind of somewhere in the middle, this hybrid sort of blend. Do you think that's where you'd place it in the decentralization spectrum? Do you think it's like Or do you think it's more kind of toward the left, more decentralized over time, and maybe competing with layer ones like Ethereum and Bitcoin?
Yeah, I think even putting decentralization on like a linear spectrum is really tough, because there are ways in which Ethereum is extremely decentralized, but then also its main stablecoin is entirely centralized. And actually the biggest stablecoins in Ethereum are completely centralized. They're just IOUs for dollars in a bank account. And those are the undercurrent of all of Ethereum DeFi. And so if those go down, Ethereum it really has like a big centralized attack vector in these centralized stablecoins. So like technically, and in terms of node count and all of that, Ethereum is extremely decentralized, but then it has this very, you know, centralized attack vector. And I think that's why it's hard to put it on like a spectrum. In terms of Terra, I would say the system itself, you know, from a technical perspective, is fairly decentralized, you know, nowhere near as decentralized as Ethereum in terms of node count and all of that, but it's a Tendermint chain, right? So it's a proof of stake Tendermint chain. What I would say is centralized is just like there are organizations in the ecosystem who have like a can make a big impact on the success or failure of this, like Jump, like you know, TFL, like Doe, if you'd agree with that, like LFG. But now increasing, there's an increasing number of those, to the point where that is becoming a decentralizing force in itself. So that's kind of my take on it. Like, I think the system is decentralized, but there are some there are some, you know, centralized entities that are a big sort of part of its success. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's a good take. David's on mute.
All right, thank you. Yeah, thank you for that, Jose. Jordi, what thoughts have come to mind before we go on and move on to any other subjects? Anything that's come up to your brain?
I mean, in terms of like, you know, you start centralized and you make incremental steps. I fully believe in that. In terms of the ecosystem, the fact that like two main big groups are building a lot of the primitives, I have mixed feelings about it. Like, I know one team that's been working hard to try to get like one of the options protocols out on Terra, and they just realized that, oh, they just launched one that's backed by the founding team. How are we going to compete with them when they're backed by Doe and these guys? And we wanted to launch the same thing. So you're going to have a lot of the ecosystem be kind of, you have that a little bit with Solana, but not as much. I think, you know, Solana has quite a diverse group of founders that ultimately are not necessarily all, you know, FTX related, et cetera, or Jump related. But look, at the end of the game, like, does it really matter what ecosystem Terra has if the key thing is a stablecoin? Like, for me, it might not even matter. It might just matter what they manage to do in terms of going to other chains and getting UST on other chains and making it spread everywhere, as opposed to necessarily building all the primitives on Terra. If they do really good ones, then it could work. It's obviously got the narrative right now, so I don't have a strong opinion, I guess.
Well, okay, talking about UST on other chains, I think it's exactly where we want to go next. Recently, Doquan proposed the Four pool, a new curve pool between UST, Frax, USDC, and USDT. So that's, of course, Terra, USD, the Frax stablecoin, USDC, and then Tether. Most importantly, pushing out DAI, removing DAI from the curve pool. He was claiming that the curve wars are over and that all emissions are going to the Four pool, meaning that all the incentives are going to be towards adding liquidity to the Four pool rather than the previous pool with DAI in it. So, Jose, I want to get your perspective on this. Doquan tweeted out, "By my hand, DAI will die," which is a pretty aggro thing to tweet out. Like, what's his deal with Maker? Like, why does he not like Maker so much? And what's the how does this Four pool from Curve kind of fit into the story?
I think, though, like, at least this is my interpretation. I don't pretend to speak for Doe. It's just that Maker and generally there's sort of a group of people on Twitter that are constantly making some pretty malformed arguments against UST, and also just calling it like a Ponzi and referring it to it and stuff like that. And I think it must be frustrating as a founder who's put their life's work into this and created something pretty incredible, which is an algorithmic stablecoin that has worked and is now, you know, and doing everything that he's doing. I think it must be pretty annoying to keep hearing that. And I think Maker has been pretty arrogant about it and sort of dismissive of it. And I think that's my interpretation is that's rubbed him him the wrong way. I don't know if that's accurate or not. But and then in terms of the four pool, it's a huge move, right? The three pool is the biggest and like most liquid pool on Curve. So it ends up being the bridge pool for a lot of stablecoin swaps, and then the bridge pool for a lot of swaps generally, especially as Curve V2 and the volatile assets becomes bigger. With this, so and Frax had its own pool, which it was participating in the Curve war, so like buying a lot of Convex in order to influence. And then Terra had its own pool that again it was doing the same thing. And they've basically like teamed up, right? They've kind of cartelified, and they're along with Redacted, and there's also I think a few others joining this coalition in order to put in this four pool, which will be, you know, Frax, UST, Tether, and USDC, and send all incentives towards this pool, which should make it the most liquid pool in stablecoin pool in DeFi and become the bridge pool, so that Frax and UST become the reference decentralized stablecoins across chain. So pretty huge move. I was really taken aback by it. I'd be curious to hear what Jordy thinks about it, actually, because yeah, it seems like a big thing.
Yeah, I mean, we've been talking about the Curve Wars for a while now, and now we've actually seen somebody make a move and try to get, you know, consortium together and pull something like this off. I think it's interesting. You know, we're very much in experimental phase here, and you know, seeing Olympus join in is, you know, you're having these like strange bedfellows here where you're kind of getting the votes, and we're in experimental land. I'm interested to see how it all plays out.
Do you think this will fully like
eating my popcorn on this one,
Jordy? Do you think this will like result in the full saturation of Ethereum DeFi with UST?
No, I don't think it's that straightforward. I mean, there's so many assumptions. Like, first of all, the assumption that centralized stablecoins are problematic right now. I mean, I agree with Jose. Like, eventually, like we have to create something for when the day comes, and we need to have something decentralized. But I don't think that the vast majority of USDC being used on Ethereum is gonna stop being utilized. I'm not sure about DAI's prospects. Obviously, that's a different story, and I'm not an expert on it, so I can't comment on DAI's prospects. But in terms of like USDC being outstripped by UST, I don't think we're at that stage right now.
I don't think we're at that stage either, but I do think centralized, like if you just zoom out to the long term, which is like what the way we work at Delphi is, we just try and figure out what's the future of crypto going to be, what should it be, and then we just try and both figure it out to invest in it, but also just build towards it, right? And for me, it's pretty clear that centralized stablecoins will not be the long term solution for a bunch of reasons, right? Like their bank accounts can get frozen and suddenly they're insolvent. They can get forced to freeze transactions. They have the power to unilaterally like freeze balances, right? And they can get forced or coerced to do that by governments. But then there's even smaller things, like they're facilitating, you know, like hundreds of billions of dollars of transactions for clients that they know nothing about, right? And that's gonna be a problem for nation states. Like at some point they're gonna be like, hey, who are these people that are transacting? Like, is there any KYC here and stuff? And you can't do that for DAI or for UST in the same way. And if those products become KYC'd, they just become way less relevant, right? And it's not the case that it'll get regulated and it'll all go at once. I don't think that's necessarily going to happen. But what's going to happen is, let's say suddenly they start freezing balances from people who didn't pay their taxes, right? Governments find some links from centralized exchanges to people who didn't declare it on their taxes. They find out they have USDC. They contact Circle and get them to freeze their balance. Suddenly, that doesn't just affect people who don't pay their taxes, right? First of all, it affects all the crypto people who don't pay their taxes, who I think is a big amount of people, but it also affects everyone else, because suddenly you're like, damn, when I hold these stables, this isn't actually crypto. It becomes very visceral, right? This isn't crypto. And so that will cause the slow move. And then if they do something like KYC, that'll again cause more of a move. And so I think like slowly over time, it'll all move to decentralized stable coins. That's kind of how we're positioning ourselves. And then just one thing I wanted to touch on that Jordy said before, about other layer ones being able to copy the design. I agree that they should do it. I think it's a good idea because you literally own your biggest use case, right? You verticalize and like own when your biggest use case is, rather than letting someone else build on top of it, and rather than letting it become centralized as well, which is another big problem. I do think it's going to be really tough for the reasons mentioned before, that it's not a mechanism. Like, it is a mechanism, but it's much more than a mechanism. It's actually the economy and the demand that's built around it. And so the layer one would end up having the same problem where it has to go through all its applications and ask them to integrate it, right? And so I think you need both a layer one that's willing to do it and like a visionary or a group of visionaries that can build all these use cases around it and get people to actually use it. Because otherwise, you risk blowing up your layer one as well, right? With something like this, as ESD and DSD did. So, and also that you can fork the mechanism, you can't fork the reserves, you can't fork the Lindy, you can't fork the experience of a year and a half of running this. So I do think that's much tougher than generally copying a mechanism is.
But Jose, one question I have for you is like about the first point about AML, KYC, and having a decentralized stablecoin being important to stand up against like the USDCs of the world. Why do you think the same fate won't befall UST? Right, so there are many centralization vectors, the LFG group being one of them. Certainly, the jump capitals of the world are highly regulated institutions. Some of this is, executed via bridges, which also could be a kind of a centralization vector. I think someone who is very into like the consensus layer of chains might even say sort of, proof of stake validators that are run by, third parties and not by users, from their own homes are another centralization vector. Can you give me the case for why this doesn't also just happen to UST?
Yeah, it's a good question. There's an important distinction, which is in Luna, no one can seize assets or freeze balances, right? There's no one you can subpoena. Like you can subpoena Jump and be like, hey, I want you to freeze this wallet. This dude hasn't paid his taxes. They can't do that, right? Neither can DOE, neither can TFL. No one can do that. In USDC, there's a clear entity, Circle, which is actually a US entity. And so like in the US jurisdiction, that can freeze balances. And if they receive a subpoena and an order by the US government, they are able to do it. So it's a case of you trusting whether they will or won't, whereas with Terra, you can't. So there are centralization vectors you can hit and make things difficult. So you could say no one can integrate UST because they're not doing KYC in the US or something like that. But you can't actually like destroy it in the same way that you could with something like USDC or Tether.
I do want to get back into and just to wrap up the conversation around the four pool. Jose, can you like measure for us the significance of the adoption of the four pool in lieu of the three pool? Like how big of a W would that be for UST and how big of an L would that be for DAI?
Like Rune made it. Yeah, it would be a massive win. I don't have like stats off the top of my head. But it would be a massive win, right? Like Curve is the liquidity hub for stablecoins and DeFi. And basically DAI is through the three pool is the most liquid decentralized stablecoin on Curve. This would make it not the case, right? It would make UST and Frax the most liquid decentralized stablecoins on Curve. So it's a huge thing because if you want to bridge from stablecoins to other stablecoins, or just if you want access to the UST ecosystem, everything becomes way easier when you have the most liquidity, and liquidity is one of the biggest moats with decentralized stablecoins. Now, Rune, and I also think Maker's response is sort of like classic, which is just they point out that unlike something like this happening to UST, this isn't a threat to the DAI peg, right? Which is true. Like the DAI's design means that it losing a huge amount of utility and demand isn't a threat to its peg, but it is a threat to its stablecoin, right? To it as a stablecoin. And like, it's not enough to just be pegged. Like you have to grow to win in this market. Like stablecoins are gonna be huge. And if you're not growing, if you're just pegging, that's not enough. Like these aren't risk management products. You know, that's one side of it, but there's the other side, which is the adoption, the utility and demand, which I feel like is just not being considered. And the response to me is like sort of symptomatic of what I see is the problem with them. And obviously people will disagree and some people are very bullish on the real world asset strategy at it. Yeah. So just my take.
Let's talk about maybe the last thing we haven't talked about with all of this, which is what would actually happen during a depegging type scenario. I think both of you acknowledge that there is some risk there and Jose would rate it far lower than Jordy. But I think of course we're all in DeFi as we end every Bankless podcast with, this is risky. You could lose everything, right? And certainly algo stablecoins have been risky in the past. And so let me just walk through like a nightmare scenario for you, why people are maybe worried about this. Critics are worried about this. Like if UST fails, like it could drag the entire industry down with us. But let's say there is some big depegging event, massive liquidation, bunch of investors get liquidated all across, you know, chains. Lots of people lose a lot of money. And the next thing you know, Elizabeth Warren is on CNN saying, hey, I told you guys the shadowy supercoders were going to take from retail and here they are again, right? And we have to regulate this industry. We have to clamp down on it. We have to outlaw it until we understand what's going on. It can't be the Wild West anymore. And it drags the entire crypto space down with it. That is what some people would say is kind of the tail event risk of something like UST growing too big and then suddenly collapsing. I'm curious, Jordy, what you think about this. Do you think this is a possible scenario? Is this something that you worry about? Or do you think even like bears and critics who say that are getting a bit over their skis? And then we'll get Jose to respond.
As an aside, I like how I used the over the skis thing early, like in the introduction. And since then, I've noticed like everyone's used it in different
language is mimetic, my friend.
look, it's a risk, like we just said. And I don't think that me and Jose are in huge disagreement about the chance of the risk, maybe a little bit, but not to a huge extent. In terms of the Elizabeth Warren thing, she's been bringing up, you know, Wonderland. Whatever's been going on that's negative in crypto, she'll bring up. Now, if something happens in the next few months, I don't think it's necessarily a big deal. I mean, it's a big deal, but it's not going to be the end of the world. If it happens in a year where, like, you know, everyone is already assuming that UST is money, it's equal to a dollar. And something for whatever reason happens at that time, yeah, it'll shake the foundation of a crypto. A lot of people might get hurt. And the thing that I hate about it the most, you see how these things play out. We've seen them recently. We've had Mim Wonderland. So we've seen like the Curf pool there. There's a certain amount of liquidity that you can get out of. And what ends up happening is out of nowhere, you just have like Alameda, one of these like huge whales, just smacks the whole thing for 500 million or whatever, takes everything out. They'll take a hit, you know, they'll lose, they'll take a $50 million loss because they've accepted the slippage that comes along with such a big order, but they will just unilaterally suck all the liquidity out. And that's the signal for everybody else to panic, but it's kind of too late because the money's already gone. There's not much USDC, USDT left in. So in that nightmare scenario, the thing that I hated about the most is that the big players who are like the big whales, you know, we don't need to like talk who they are, will probably like be able to swipe the Curf pool first. They'll take out the best price. And then the system that Luna has for, you know, until the Bitcoin system comes along, right now they just will use Luna as the collateral. There's a cap every day. This is what we saw back in last May. There's $20 million cap. Now, even if that's increased to 100 million, the reality is that the retail guys are not going to be able to get any of that 20 million per day. It'll just instantly be taken out every day by Jumbo, whoever is.
By the way,
20,
yeah.
20 right. million Luna or 20 million UST?
We can go check the stats. I don't think the cap daily cap is 20 million UST, but we can go check that afterwards.
Okay, I'm pretty sure back in May that it was only $20 million of UST, but back then the price of Luna was so small that you may be right. Maybe it was just because it wasn't that far from a dollar at the time that maybe. The point being, there is some cap, and I don't think it's 20 million Luna.
It's not 20 million Luna, but I don't know. Yeah, but we'll get the exact numbers for listeners maybe for the
show. My understanding is that it used to be 10 million and then Jump pushed to 20 million. And there's been discussion about getting it to 100 million. And what we see in times of demand, like recently, is every day it's capped at the max every day, but in the other direction, people are trying to get into Terra because they want to get on Anchor. Yeah. So it's capped every day. And someone's making a lot of money on the arbitrage because they can make 30, 40 bips. You can go to Binance, sell it for 40 bips above the peg, and somebody is getting like all 20 right away and making like 40 bips on it. The reverse is going to happen in the bad scenario where the people who are actually able to get out are going to cap the supply, and those are going to be like the sophisticated whales. So you'll have the curve pool taken out, and then you'll have the max supply every day. So that's a nightmare scenario. I hope doesn't happen, but unfortunately, if it does happen, it won't be very equitable.
So, Jose, back to you. Jordy is manifesting some 2008 energy where retail is once again left holding the bag for a tail risk event like this. How do you respond to maybe that moral risk, the moral hazard here of an experiment like UST getting too big?
Yeah, it would definitely be catastrophic. I think right now it would be mainly catastrophic for Terra itself. So obviously, like Luna holders, Luna would death spiral to, some asymptote towards zero, I suppose. UST would do the same. So it'd be very catastrophic for Terra itself. There is a lot of UST on Ethereum and liquidity pools, but I don't think, most of the effect would really be on Terra itself. That actually changes with the fork pool, right? Where the effect would be more systemic in that case, because it would be the reference currency for DeFi as a whole. But I don't really agree with the idea that retail would get screwed, because retail is just like smaller sizing, right? So it'd be much easier for them to get out with lower slippage than it would for some of these big funds, where some of these big funds would literally just not be able to get out in size because of what you say, where the liquidity would just dry up on the curve pool. So I think they'll be faster.
Yeah, exactly. It depends who gets out first. Like if they wait too long and somebody else, like, I agree, it's a lot easier to go through the door if you're small, but you need to know. You need to know to get through the door. You need to know.
But absolutely. But I think there's also going to be like, right now, most of the liquidity is on Curve. I think Astroport is going to be spinning up its own stablecoin pool. So there's going to be liquidity on Terra too. So users will be able to kind of exit that way. So I don't know. Yeah, I agree that the whales will know first, but they'll also suffer a lot more slippage. And they'll also, we've also seen a few times where whales exited, suffered slippage for something that wasn't the death spiral they were looking for. So yeah. I'm sensitive to the moral argument, obviously, but I do think two things. There's a moral argument for UST as well, right? There's a moral argument for decentralized stablecoins, like actual decentralized stablecoins that can't be stopped by nation states. So that's the first thing. I think that's really important. And then the second thing is that everything in the space has failure risk. These are all experiments, including something like DAI, like I mentioned before. Almost blew up on Black Thursday, right? And that would have been at that time catastrophic for the space. Obviously, we have the DAO hack from back in the day, which was something that shouldn't have even been that risky, but was, because it had a smart contract bug in it. So I think, like as you say at the end, right? This is the frontier. We all kind of accept that risk when we play here. But I do think one thing that is important is that everyone, and especially if you have a platform and you're bullish Luna, you're bullish UST. You should be honest about the risks, right? And that's something that we're very careful to do at Delphi. When we present it, we're always careful to disclaim it in products that we help incubate or contribute to. It's always present in the disclaimers. And so I think being honest about the risks so that people know them is super important, because that's actually what makes me bullish about this. It's not that I think it's riskless. It's that I understand the risks and think the upside is far outweighs it.
Bull case, bear case. It's time for closing arguments right now. And since we started with Jose, I'm going to flip to Jordy first. Your closing arguments for why you think it makes sense to be bearish on Luna / UST.
Yeah, I mean, we've used them interchangeably, but I'll just recap that I think they are a little bit different. The bear case for Luna first, assuming that UST is okay, is that the demand gets kind of dwindled down because other chains do something similar, because somebody does a better mousetrap. There's ways that Luna price itself suffers without a DPEG. So that's kind of half of the equation. The other half is obviously on UST. So there's a lot of risks. The BTC bridge risk hasn't been figured out. There's market risk. Unfortunately, BTC might go down, and then like a lot of the reserves that have been built up, the narrative will change. BTC could go up, and then like Jose said, everything just looks completely different. But we have to be aware of the risks. We have to be aware that there's centralization right now. There's big funds that are going to be able to kind of pull strings and have inside information and know things a lot earlier. So I'm very happy that Jose gave like a full disclaimer. I think that's the most important thing. There is indeed a moral argument for it succeeding and having something like that succeed. My full bear case is that we are very far away from that endpoint. There's a ton of stuff to figure out. Even with having such a good team working on it, we have no idea what's going to happen even in like in a few months when anchor yield goes down. There are so many unknowns. So that's the main bear case. Like we can't just consider it a foregone conclusion that we're going to get to this end state.
Jose, I'd love to hear your final thoughts, your final closing statements as to the bull case for Luna. And the chat is also asking, since they are perceiving the show as to be focusing on the bear case, I just want to give you just a few extra minutes, a few extra time to really just with confidence, give us the bull case for Luna. Just make us all Luna maxis.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So first of all, I think you guys have been pretty good. Thank you very much for the platform and for opening this up to other opinions. I think as one thing to note is as lunatics, we need to be like accepting of other communities and educating them on Luna and on risks, because Luna actually relies on like UST relies on being the reference stablecoin for DeFi as a whole, not just for Terra. So it needs to be on Ethereum. It needs to be everywhere. And being antagonistic and like hating on people and criticizing and stuff is not the lunatic way. I know that though sometimes counters that with some of his Twitter spice, which is I love his Twitter spice, but it's always directed at a person, right? It's never directed at a community, and that's really important. Like there's no reason why we should hate Ethereum or hate any of the other chains that are we're all gonna make it basically. And then so. On the Luna bull argument. So one of the biggest things that makes me bullish is how misunderstood it still is and controversial, and also how bad and like repetitive some of the FUD is. So like, I think the PEG FUD and the Anchor Sustainability FUD to me is like actually pretty weak. I sort of explain my arguments for why I think that's the case. I think there's stronger arguments against UST. I think probably the key man risk and the technical, which we didn't cover, but just the fact that Terra isn't a particularly scalable layer one, and maybe that's not the end game. I think there are sort of counter arguments to that as well. But all our best investments have always been controversial, and how controversial this is and is one of the things that makes me super bullish. And then in terms of UST itself, so I think people just over-index and focus on this peg risk and just repeat it over and over again without focusing on the upside, right? On what happens if it works. And what happens if it works is you have the UST as the biggest decentralized stablecoin, also in my mind, the most decentralized in the biggest market in crypto, which is money, right? Decentralized stablecoins are literally going to be a multi-trillion dollar industry. I think most people that are in crypto can agree with that. And UST currently is the fastest horse in that race. And so and if we agree that stablecoins are a network effect business, right? You need liquidity, you need Lindy, you need people to trust it. Then you want to bet on the winners and you want to bet on whoever's growing fastest. And UST's model, while more vulnerable to tail risks, as we've spoken about, allows it to grow much faster. And that's a big deal, you know, because if you grow fast in a network effects business, you win, which is why the Anchor yield reserve subsidy makes so much sense, similar to the PayPal strategy, right, of subsidizing its initial users, and why this whole strategy makes so much sense to me. And so for me, it's like you have a stablecoin that was already working really well, growing really fast, that's becoming even stronger with a Bitcoin reserve, that is going to be finding ways to grow over time, both through additional sales, for which there's quite a lot of appetite from investors still, and then also from just growing it through seniorage and continuing to buy Bitcoin. And so I think you have a model that can grow super fast and that's also becoming more and more resilient by the day with the addition of this LFG reserve. And so, and then when you combine that with a layer one that's thriving, where I continue to see some of the smartest builders that I've seen anywhere on crypto building on Terra, whether it's in completely new primitives as well that haven't succeeded on Ethereum, like Prism, right, which is a yield splitting primitive. There's APY and Pendle on Ethereum, but they really haven't succeeded, whereas I think Prism has done a much better job nailing that. There's other things like perps with order book, Forex perps that are coming with Vertex. There's perps that are coming with Lavana. There's a whole ecosystem around gaming and NFTs that Doe's putting a lot of effort into. And so when you combine all of this I just think there's no faster horse in the decentralized stablecoin race than UST, and we like to bet on winners.
There you go. Bankless listeners, this has been the bull and bear case for Luna, UST, probably the most comprehensive I've ever heard. And I want to give a special thanks to both Jose and Jordy for joining us and having such a civil, informative, well-argued debate. We appreciate you guys.
Thanks very much, guys. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Bankless Nation, we will link to some of the things that Jose in particular referenced in the show notes as soon as we have some links. That's, you know, links to long-term anchor yield. I think you referenced something there. A few other stats we might link to as well. But as always, got to end with this. None of this has been financial advice. Right? I think our panelists were very clear that there are risks in crypto. There are risks in DeFi. They're just everywhere. But we want to let you know that you could definitely lose what you put in. We're headed west. This is the frontier. It's not for everyone, but we're glad you're with us on the Bankless journey. Thanks a lot.